Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Hope you've all had a great week. I also want to wish all of you out there a very happy, healthy, safe, and successful new year. Lots of stuff going on. The new Congress sworn in, and the continuation of the lunacy from the administration, obviously going unabated. For those of you who are new to the program, my name, aptly enough, is Michael Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. Today, the responsibility is supposed to, and you understand the word supposed to, or if you don't, you will soon, supposed to be handled by the Department of Homeland Security that in so many ways fails to live up to its obligations that I have come to refer to DHS as the Department of Homeland Surrender. And boy, are we surrendering our sovereignty, our national security, and the American dream for the citizens of the United States, irrespective of their race, religion, ethnicity, or any other such factor. Absolutely astonishing that in this day and age, with all the threats we face, all the problems that America and Americans face, that the politicians in Washington, at least most of them, absolutely refuse to do what's necessary. My program is devoted to pointing out those failures, making people understand exactly what should be done and what is not being done. And so that's why we're here. If you want to read a little bit more about me, there's three terrific websites, and I'm allowed to say terrific, even though I am, looking at it through a slanted perspective, I guess. MichaelCutler.net, my own personal website, C-U-T-L-E-R. It's one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, C-U-T-L-E-R, MichaelCutler.net. I also have another website where we do videos for And Magazine, and that's TalkBorder.com, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R. And finally, last but certainly not least, I am a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, C-A-P-S, and that's an acronym for Californians for Population Stabilization. In fact, they have some of my articles posted on their terrific website right now, capsweb.org. They are located, as they would like to tell you, in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, where the weather is almost always fabulous. Made some great friends out there. Always great to visit, and great part of the country, great organization, and I'm certainly pleased to work with them. But without further ado, I see that I have a friend on the line, Lauren Martell. I'm going to bring her on, and let me tell you a little bit about Lauren, or I'll let her tell you about herself. Hi, Lauren. Happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday and happy New Year, Michael Cutler.
You,
how
lady.
Are you doing?
I'm doing terrific, and more the better now that you're joining me. Pleasant surprise. I did not note in my email that went out earlier today that you would be joining me, but you know, Lauren and I are friends. She is an attorney in South Carolina, Hilton Head, beautiful part of the country. Also, while we speak about beautiful parts of the country, and in fact, I will be getting together with Lauren and lots of other folks next week in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, when the Tea Party holds yet another convention. They gave me the privilege, the honor of addressing them during the presidential debates. Gosh, what was it, about 6 months ago, Lauren?
Well, it's actually, believe it or not, it's a year ago. This will be
the
second
really?
Annual convention. So it was right around the time they did the presidential candidates, you know, debate in Myrtle Beach, the Fox
News. That's right.
News,
yeah, well, in fact, we got to see the debate in that huge
auditorium.
That was some auditorium. It was humongous.
It was. There were a lot of people in Myrtle Beach that weekend, and it was excellent. So, well, we're looking forward to another good time in Myrtle Beach, you know, next weekend. Kicking it off, I think January 11th is Friday night. We're going to have some state issues with some exciting, you know, things that are going on in the state of South Carolina dealing with Obamacare. There's two different pieces of legislation that are being proposed by some of our local senators. And so that'll kick it off on Friday night. And then, as you know, we have you as a great speaker, and then we'll have some of our local delegation, Congressman Mick Mulvaney and Jeff Duncan and people from D.C. like Frank Gaffney and Tom Trento from Florida. We've got a real big group of a variety of different people who are experts in each one of their areas. So,
and how can people, if people want to attend, how what would be the you have the information, don't you? The best way of hooking them up.
Yeah. Actually, the best way, if somebody wanted to come to the South Carolina second annual Tea Party Coalition Convention, it's being held at the Spring Maid Beach Resort, which is right on South Ocean Boulevard in Myrtle Beach. And the contact person there is Joe Dugan, and I have his telephone number, which is 843-234-0118. And you can call him directly, and anyone who's interested in either flying in or driving in, we encourage all conservative, like-minded people, and also people who are just interested in gaining some education and gaining some information so that they can think for themselves as well.
Well, you know, it's rare that I disagree with you, Lauren, but not only conservatives, you know, I'm registered as a Democrat. I think one of the biggest problems that America faces today is we have become so divided. And I got to tell you, I have no use for either major party. I really am of the belief that any politician who feels that he or she is beholden to a party is probably ignoring the best interests of their constituency. What do you think of that statement?
Well, I agree with you on that statement. And to that end, I think that we do agree. You know, you just have to look at the definition of things. And as I was getting ready to come on your show and sort of preparing for it, I think that's where communication breaks down a lot. And if you look at the definition of conservative, I think by what you just defined right there, you like to have the Constitution read, you know, the way it was originally intended to. And whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, whatever you call yourself there, ultimately, I think, you know, you're looking at reviewing the Constitution in a conservative way. So therefore, actually, Mr. Cutler, I would submit that you are, in fact, conservative.
Well, we can have that debate. Maybe we'll have it over dinner in South Carolina. But, you know, the bottom line, I think we all want what's best for America, for Americans, for our children, to honor the incredible sacrifices of the men and women of the military and law enforcement, the firefighters, Americans who put their lives on the line each and every day for the safety and security of their communities or this country. And we're not doing that. You know, a nation's security begins and ends at its borders, and this has been going on for decades, and I blame both parties, a pox on both of their houses, as they say. Our borders only exist on maps, this movement towards globalism, and certainly it's an inexorable move. We are part of a global community, and yes, I know when you look at planet Earth from the vantage point of space, and you know, my heroes when I was growing up weren't so much the athletes as it were the astronauts and test pilots. I have met some of the astronauts along the way, got letters from some of the early ones, Shepard and Grissom, and from space, we don't see boundaries, but believe it or not, folks, there really are borders, and they really count. Because not every country has a constitution. Not every country agrees with the concept of human rights. And when the day comes that the rest, would you disagree with what I'm saying?
No, and actually I was just going to chime in and say it's shocking to me to see what Egypt has recently done, because basically a minority of voters over there in Egypt have just ratified their newest constitution, which I would also submit is completely Sharia compliant and very much contrary to what people originally, you know, some people originally were hoping for with this whole Arab Spring and democracy in Egypt and that kind of thing, has really been pushed aside by this this new constitution that just ratified in Egypt recently, which basically allows for a lot of things that I think would be human rights violations if you read it carefully.
Yeah, you know, we have a call. Let me out of curiosity, we're flying blind here. Someone just called in. Let me just see who this is. And
it may be one of my friends that I told to come on in, because some of my friends here in South Carolina are real excited about this issue that you bring to the table. So hopefully maybe it's somebody out of Columbia, South Carolina.
Well, let's find out.
All right.
You're on the air with Mike Cutler. Who's calling? Hello. Yes, identify yourself. Who is this? Hello.
Not my friend if they're not going to identify themselves.
I guess not. Well, I guess you're just listening in then, so I'll mute your microphone. So there. Okay. Well, we tried. You know, this issue of immigration, by the way, and this is something that's so important, and I don't understand how in the world immigration has become labeled as a conservative issue. You know, I'm registered as a Democrat. I'm pro-labor. My dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He was my biggest hero. You look at those men and women who do the hard work, the blue-collar jobs, construction, and the people in the steel foundries, and all those tough, physically demanding, dangerous, back-breaking jobs. And I think they are really America's heroes. They are the backbone, the foundation of America. And what we're doing with immigration today is undermining all of our workers, whether they're computer programmers, whether they're construction workers, corporations, unscrupulous employers, people that are benefiting by the exploitation of workers from around the world and at the expense of American workers are destroying America's middle class. They're destroying America's national security. They're kind of like the folks who know the price of everything, the value of nothing. And I've always thought of the Democratic Party, if there was a delineation when I was growing up, and unfortunately I'm on the wrong side of 60, so that's a while ago, but here in New York, in Brooklyn, when I was growing up, my friends for the most part were in fact Democrats, or their parents were. And the idea was that their parents were the school teachers and the letter carriers and the construction workers. They belonged to those unions. They worked hard. They built America. My friends whose parents were Republicans generally were professional people or owned businesses. We didn't see each other as warring camps. We weren't the enemy to the other side. We were simply Americans, and we knew that the government had disparate goals and objectives depending on which group of people they were representing, and that's why those two parties made sense. Today, I don't think the Democrats are truly Democrats. I don't think the Republicans are truly Republicans. And we are destroying the capacity for Americans to properly support themselves. And this at a time when the unemployment rate is in the stratosphere, these butchered numbers, these doctored numbers. I almost get the feeling that Bernie Madoff is over at the Labor Department cooking the books. 7.8% unemployment. Do you believe that statistic, Lauren Martell?
No, not at all. It's probably double that.
And that's in the good communities and the bad. And,
yeah.
And you know, one of the major networks was running a promo. I don't know if we talked about this off air. But they kept saying, coming up, jobs. We have jobs. We're going to tell you where to get jobs. And it was all about jobs. And they were promoting this throughout the whole program. Every time they went to a commercial break, jobs. And they finally got to the job segment, and these were jobs that paid generally between $8 to $10 an hour. And I was infuriated. I said, my gosh, how in the world can somebody grasping at that thin straw of hope listen to this business about jobs and then be told that what they were offering them was $10 an hour? How do you support yourself in any community inside the borders of this country on 10 bucks an hour? It's an absurdity. And, you know, for the first time in I don't know how long, according to news reports I've read, the hourly wage average has declined. The middle class is contracting. CBS News a couple of months ago defined the middle class as being those people making between, I think it was $36,000 a year to $118,000 a year. Where in the world can anybody, even living alone in a house that's paid off, perhaps no pension, no mortgage, how in the world can anyone think of himself or herself as middle class on $36,000 a year? And even with those numbers, they said that the middle class had gone from 61% of the population to 51%. I'm willing to bet that it's probably under 30% in real world terms. Any arguments?
No, I believe that you're on the right track.
So then explain to me how this is simply a conservative issue, a right-wing issue. Isn't this an issue that should be of huge concern to every American, irrespective of their political orientation? And by the way, for good measure, what are we also doing? Bringing in members of violent gangs, giving opportunities for terrorists to enter the United States and embed themselves. I'm sure you saw, or I hope you saw the report that was commissioned and executed for the Homeland Security Committee in Congress by Mike McCall, who, by the way, he's a Republican from Texas. He's going to be chairing the Homeland Security Committee, And an amazing member of Congress will be joining him on that subcommittee, on that committee, actually, not the subcommittee, but the Homeland Security Committee. And that gentleman is Lou Barletta. Mm-hmm. And for those of you not familiar with Lou, you need to learn a little bit about him. He just won his second term in Congress, thank God. Amazing guy. He had been the mayor of a town known as Hazleton in Pennsylvania. He was the first mayor in the United States of America to enact ordinances not to go after Latinos, as the ACLU or the RAZA would have you believe, but to protect them. Protect them from the scourge of MS-13 and other transnational gangs. I've been to Hazleton. In fact, I was his final witness when he was sued by the ACLU for enacting those ordinances. And it's a beautiful, bucolic town. It was a mining town originally in the hills of Pennsylvania. It looks like a storybook kind of place. And it was very peaceful. And around the time that Lou became the mayor, suddenly people were running to him and saying, we've had shootings. One man, as I remember the story, and I videotaped him, and it's on my website at talkborder.com. We did an interview that ran about 25 minutes. I hope you folks take the opportunity to go to talkborder.com and check out all the videos, but especially the one with Lou Barletta. And Lou said that they came to him because in one case, a guy driving by the park saw these thugs hanging out in the park selling drugs to the kids. He went over to them and says, you guys got to cut it out. My kids play here. Take your stuff and take it elsewhere. And they shot and killed him on the spot. And Lou became aware of the fact that the threat was being posed, not because these were Latinos or because they were this or they were that. These were bad guys. And every ethnic group, and I don't care who you are, every ethnic group has its bad guys and its good guys. But unfortunately, MS-13, a violent gang, started in El Salvador and Los Angeles and spread. It's got its tendrils clear across the country. I started investigating them as an immigration agent back in the early 90s. And they are amazingly violent, incredibly violent. They're right up there almost with the Mexican cartels. And he saw this problem and said, you know, we're going to enact ordinances to make Hazleton inhospitable to illegal aliens. And you know, this makes such perfect sense. Because those immigration laws that are so vilified by so many politicians, including especially the President of the United States, President Barack Obama, who keeps saying, we're not going to enforce the laws, we're going to ignore the laws, we don't care about those laws, we don't need those stinking laws, perhaps. Those laws were designed for two things, protect innocent lives and protect the jobs of American workers. In fact, the Labor Department used to be in charge of administering and enforcing the immigration laws right up to the Second World War, when our leaders back then from the Greatest Generation recognized that people who could enter this country illegally could be, to use the parlance of the 40s, saboteurs. And in fact, some Germans did just that. You can go to the FBI website and see it. I also wrote an article for CAPS, Why Do We Still Need the Military If We Don't Secure Our Borders, where eight Nazi soldiers came here. A couple had been naturalized Americans, by the way. It sounds similar to the Somali deal. Came here by submarine, and they were going to blow up factories that were providing munitions and other vital resources for Great Britain and the Allies in Europe before America entered the war. So we understood as a country that if you have no control over who's coming in, you're going to wind up with saboteurs, terrorists, criminals, and people that will compete unfairly with American workers. So again, rhetorically, I have to ask, given all that, how is this purely an issue for conservative rather than liberals? I think it should be an issue for all Americans.
Oh, yeah. I think this is an American issue. But, you know, as I was preparing, and it's funny because I was just thinking about our country, that how lawless it's really becoming, because so many different laws are out there. People want to follow some and exclude themselves from some. And so I looked up the basic definition of law. And going back to that, what it means, so, you know, we're communicating on, okay, what is a law? And then who gets to weigh in on the law? And a law is a system of rules and guidelines which are enforced through institutions to govern behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
And laws are usually made by governments, specifically in our country, by the legislature. And the formation of them may be influenced by a constitution, which obviously in our country it is as well, with rights that are encoded therein, which we have our Bill of Rights and rights within the Constitution. And then the law actually shapes, you know, politics, the economy, society in countless ways, and serves as a social mediator of relations between people. So, you know, in the history of understanding the law, there's been great, you know, and obviously Thomas Jefferson and all the founding fathers really looked into all this thing, and they were very rich in their source of scholarly inquiry into legal history and philosophy and economic analysis, as well as sociology.
Mm-hmm.
But the law raises important and complex issues concerning equality, fairness, and justice. And that's sort of what America has really always been a beacon. I mean, when you look at the Supreme Court of the, you know, in Washington, it's got justice on one side, and it's got the, you know, the higher virtues that we seek in the law to make sure that we have the most prosperous society that we can possibly have. So going back to defining law, well, that's why we have it. And that seems like that's a good idea, right?
Right.
Well, now we've got these laws on the books that are there, that are just and fair laws, you know, guidelines, so to speak, of how you bring somebody into a country legally versus, you know, people running under tunnels in the, you know, dead of night. You know, we have probably 20 million or more. I think that was the statistic back in 2007. Yeah, so, you know, who knows, 30 million maybe, you know, people we don't even know.
Always, by the way, they don't always enter without inspection, and we should really use that term, folks. You know, I think it's really important. Words have meaning and power. And by the way, if this little law lecture sounded like it was given by an attorney, it's probably because Lauren is an attorney. And I had to throw that in. But, you know, the point of the matter is that if you look at the words that have been used, you know, when you use the word alien, everyone looks, oh, you can't say that word. Alien is a legal term, and under the Immigration and Nationality Laws of the United States, an alien is simply being is simply defined as any person who is not a citizen or national. Now, if you think that's an insult, I'd love to know why or how. The problem with the word alien for the open borders folks who I've come to call immigration anarchists, because there is anarchy in America today, it begins at our borders. And if you want to talk about trickle-down anarchy, it permeates America. Whether it's this idea that we're going to create sanctuary cities that become safe havens for people who violate laws that are designed to protect us, even though harboring, shielding, aiding, abetting, inducing, or encouraging aliens to enter illegally or remain thereafter in violation of law are felonies, you would never know it, because the anarchy that now exists is an anarchy where immigration laws are no longer deemed proper, necessary, whatever, by this administration and by politicians around the country. And people are paying with their lives. They're paying with their jobs. They're paying with the security of America and with the American dream, not as a statement of xenophobia, but as a statement of common sense. Nobody would trust someone who would sneak into the back of their house in the dead of night. Or no one would open the door to somebody who refused to stand in front of the peephole so that the homeowner could look through that peephole and make a decision as to whether or not to let that person in. And in fact,
right,
that's why houses come equipped with doorbells and peepholes. It's recognized throughout the world. And, you know, in fact, knock-knock jokes, which we all learned as kids, you know, the old knock-knock, who's there kind of thing, those jokes are universally told and accepted around the world, because the idea that a stranger needs to first ask, may I, before entering, is a universally accepted concept, except apparently where America's borders are concerned. So the other side said, well, we're going to call them undocumented. And that started with Jimmy Carter. So they said, they're undocumented. And I was on some TV programs and radio programs, and I debated some of these knuckleheads. And I said, wait a minute, undocumented shouldn't give anybody comfort. It means that they have no way of identifying themselves in a reliable fashion. Either they're unable or, more likely, unwilling. That's how criminals hide. That's how the terrorists embedded themselves in our country. So the open borders folks listened to what I said and said, wow, we got to change the language again, because undocumented doesn't sound good. This guy Cutler, boy, he's a problem. So now the new word of the day, I don't know if you've seen it, Lauren, but it's gaining more and more use among the open borders advocates, the immigration anarchists. They're now calling them unauthorized. It sounds like Simon Says, we just didn't say may I, you see. Bottom line, as an immigration agent, we use the term. and that term was EWI, entrant without inspection. In other words, they snuck in. And it's important that we get that right. And it's important that we understand that we are dealing with laws that are supposed to protect us. And look at what the government does. There's a couple of stories. I guess you saw the thing that I put out. And I mentioned that I would talk about this. So let me just get to two things that I mentioned. By the way, we have somebody on the line. Let's see who's calling in while we're doing this. Hang on one moment.
Okay.
You're speaking with Mike Cutler. Who's on the line? Hello. Well, I guess not.
Hmm.
Okay, well, that's fine. Here's the deal. Let me bring up the first of the articles that I wanted to discuss today. First of all, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has a website. And what they do, which is very interesting, is they have a website where they put up their press releases. And they try to tell the world, are we doing a great job or what? And they talked about how they arrested this guy. And here's an excerpt. A Guatemalan national with dual citizenship in Mexico was removed from the United States Wednesday by ICE. And it goes on to mention his name was Orlando Escobar León, a.k.a. Eduardo Morales Esquivel, 42 years old, the leader of a multinational alien smuggling network that was responsible for smuggling East African and Bangladeshi nationals from Colombia into Central America and eventually the United States. Now, stop and think about this, folks. We're not necessarily talking about dishwashers here. And I don't know if any of these people were terrorists, but Bangladesh is on the list of special interest countries, countries that we associate with terrorism, number one. Number two, okay. We know that there is an Al-Qaeda presence, a growing Al-Qaeda presence in East Africa. So here is a guy, dual national, probably using his Mexican citizenship so that even if we found him, we would just push him back across the border. But in fact, in this case, he was extradited to the United States. That doesn't mean that he hadn't been here. It just means that this time they brought him here to prosecute him for his involvement in this conspiracy with 12 others. And during a period of 2 years, they had purportedly brought in at least 100 illegal aliens from a dangerous part of the world. Think what just 19 terrorists did to us on 9/11. So they prosecuted this guy. He got all of 36 or 37 months in jail, and now we're deporting him back to Guatemala. 37 months in jail for moving at least 100 illegal aliens across our borders surreptitiously, and these are aliens from a part of the country, from part of the world, where Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations are prominent.
Yeah.
Now, what bothers me also, Lauren, not a word in that article about any effort whatsoever being made to locate or identify any of those 100 aliens that were smuggled into the United States. So they're out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe they're working illegally. Maybe they're doing some other things. Or maybe they're putting a bomb together. We have no way of knowing who they are, where they are, or why it was so important for them to travel halfway around the world to come into the United States through Colombia, through the Central American region and Guatemala and so forth, and ultimately into the United States. How crazy is that, that there's nothing in there about any effort being expended to look for these people?
Right. Well, I think it was Tacitus, who was an ancient Greek philosopher, I believe, who said, the more corrupt a state, the more numerous the laws. So kind of going back to that, I believe that when you give special status for people who are here criminally, illegally, however you want to call it, it literally trounces on the rights, the constitutional rights of due process of law that is given to people who are here legally, legal immigrants and citizens who are, you know, who are entitled to be subjected to the 14th Amendment of our Constitution. And so you see what where we are in here, and this is where we're experiencing literally chaos caused by criminal behavior. I would submit caused in some situations by the people who are actually there to enforce the laws that are on the book to protect. But this is what we've also found. most recently with this crazy, you know, fiscal cliff thing, our Congress voted on that. They were given 1,000 pages worth of a bill that was to be turned into a law. They were given 3 minutes to read it,
yep,
and then they had to vote on it.
Well, you know, it's remarkable, but I've had longstanding relationships with a member of Congress. I'm not going to get into his name. I'm not trying to throw mud at anybody. Worked with a member of Congress for many years, refused to support one piece of legislation because I thought that it was ill-conceived, spoke with his counsel, and people that I had worked with for nearly two decades suddenly say, we're not going to talk to you anymore. Didn't go out there and attack anybody. It was enough that I said, I think this is bad law. I'm not going to support it.
Right.
I mean, it's tyrannical. I don't understand how that works. And then you look at the problems we're facing.
Well,
the
here's
Washington
my question.
Times, right? I got to just read this. I have to read this.
Yeah.
This, you know, we're hearing about amnesty, and we're seeing the major networks saying, oh, it's a done deal. If the Republicans want to maintain any kind of a future, they have to vote for millions upon millions of illegal aliens getting amnesty. Let me tell you what, folks. And then we hear this nonsense. Well, first we have to secure the borders. Really? Is that the only problem? And they keep saying the borders, meaning the so-called four border states, you know, California, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. We have 50 border states, folks. Let's be real clear. Any state that has a seaport or an international airport is a border state. There are also border states along the northern border that supposedly separates the United States from Canada. And we have problems with people coming across the Canadian border. Not the same kind of problems. I've had the privilege of working with Canadian law enforcement. I've worked with the members of the RCMP for many years, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They are every bit as trustworthy and professional as the best that America has to offer. I've worked with the Metropolitan Police of Toronto and Montreal. I've worked with other law enforcement officials from the Canadian government. They're wonderful to work with. Not the same problems that you see with the Mexican situation. But nevertheless, Canada does have terrorist organizations working within their borders. We have terrorist organizations here. Often terrorists travel internationally to conduct meetings and to do other preparatory work before they carry out attacks or fund attacks in other parts of the world. So those borders are important. But so the problem is this. Number one, it's more than securing the borders. We have an immigration system that's dysfunctional, that has no integrity. And then we get to an article that appeared in the Washington Times just a couple of days ago. And I use this article as a springing off point or jumping off point for an article that I wrote for Californians for Population Stabilization. Go to the capsweb.org website. You'll get to read my article and a bunch of articles by other writers. But here was the title, and this was right off the Washington Times title. Steve Dinan, who I know Stephen Dinan, he's a good reporter. He's been covering the immigration beat for many years. He's covered the beat. In fact, when I've testified before hearings, he's been at some of those congressional hearings where I've testified. And what did he say? Audit. Fed's immigration check system fails 12% of the time. Now, what does that mean? Now, let me read this to you. The federal government system of tracking immigration status is so broken that it gives a green light to one in eight aliens who have been ordered deported, according to an audit Tuesday that found the government has gone on to approve some of those who slipped through for work in sensitive areas of airports and granted them benefits such as Medicaid or food stamps. Some of those aliens who should have been kicked out had serious criminal records, including assault and extortion convictions, according to the audit by the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General. The Inspector General, folks, the IG, is the equivalent of Internal Affairs for a police department. Now, catch this. All told, some 800,000 immigrants, deportable aliens in my terminology, are living in the United States right now who already have been ordered deported but have not yet left the country or been removed. Not yet left. They were put back out on the street after a judge ordered that they be removed. And then what does ICE do? They'll go out, have a massive roundup. They'll capture 38 of these 800,000. Boy, I sleep better now. And they give it some great name, Operation Return to Sender, Operation, you know, whatever. It sounds like they dug up General Patton themselves, shoved him into a uniform, handed him a flag and a rifle, and told him to head for the border. It's an absurdity. I've come to call all these operational things that they put together and all these great code names. I have one name for them, Operation Backrub. For any of you parents out there, if you have a child and your kid gets up in the middle of the night with a nightmare or night terrors, and I have four kids, I certainly know what that's like. You know, you want that kid to go back to sleep. They need a night's sleep, and you need a night's sleep. So what do? You serve up some warm milk, you rub their back, and in as soothing a voice as possible, you tell them whatever it is you think that they need to hear so they will go to sleep so you can go to sleep. Operation Back Rub. It really works well if you think of it in those terms. So
yeah.
they go, am I right or wrong in what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, that works. It does. Absolutely.
Doesn't it?
Operation
I've used
that
Back Rub?
Myself. Yeah, Operation Back Rub. It's good.
Now listen to this. Here, this comes out of the article again. This is about who we have turned loose. People that they had in custody, all they had to do was get them the hell out of here. And they said the failures in our sample. Now, this is the Washington Times quoting the Inspector General, Internal Affairs. The failures in our sample include individuals who applied for unemployment and disability insurance, food stamp, driver's licenses, and other benefits, the auditor said. Several individuals had criminal records, including assault with a deadly weapon, extortion, drug convictions, and other convictions such as burglary, stalking, and child abuse. Stalking.
Wow.
There was another case about an alien who was extradited back to Mexico and who had killed in Mexico and had killed here. There was another one about a guy who the Chinese government wouldn't take back. So rather than keep him in jail, we ultimately released him. He showed up at the house of this woman, and if you look at her name, she was certainly part of the American Chinese community. I don't know what her immigration status was. They didn't report on it in the article, and it doesn't much matter. She's dead because this thug came to her house. She got panicky, called the police. He ran away, came back 2 weeks later, according to a newspaper account, plunged a knife into her chest, and ultimately mutilated her dead body, and according to the newspaper report, removed her heart and her lung and ran off with it.
Wow.
This is my point. This is not anti-immigrant to enforce these laws, folks. And if we do a massive amnesty program, Citizenship and Immigration Services, this inept, screwed-up agency that's part and parcel of all of this problem, the problem of the fraud, the problem that about 6 years ago, GAO reported how Citizenship and Immigration Services claimed to have lost 111,000 immigration files relating to applications for a variety of benefits, including 30,000 aliens who we naturalized without their files. So
yeah.
This inept machinery, no matter what you think about amnesty, understand that the machinery doesn't work. This is like pre-flighting an airplane. Imagine you get on an airliner and the captain comes on and says, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Captain Lucky. I hope you feel lucky because we didn't pre-flight the airplane and the engines are falling apart. The radios don't work and we're about to fly into a storm over some very high mountains. But bear with us. We're going to try it. And that's exactly
right. That is the best. That's a great analogy. I mean, we are a nation who has basically lost our own sovereignty. We think we're a sovereign nation, but we're not sovereign if we have 30 million, 40 million people who aren't citizens. I mean, then we become what? A multinational, multicultural.
Well, you know what's going to happen.
I think
if Mr. Obama and the ACLU and La Raza had their way, they would tell the ICE agents, listen, forget about immigration. We're going to make you into the Men in Black, if you saw that movie with Will Smith. And so unless some critter comes up to you that landed in a flying saucer, you're not even to talk to them. But then, of course, if you did go over to creatures that came off a flying saucer, you'd probably be accused of species profiling. God only knows. Mm-hmm. This is remarkable. No other country on the face of the earth does not take their immigration laws or their borders seriously.
Not only that, but we have these, they're, you know, it's not due process of law if you have legal immigrants here versus illegal immigrants, but we have illegal immigrants that are on food stamps in America.
Well, that's what we're just talking about here, but here's the point. How would a person who went through the process legally, did everything right, followed the letter as well as the spirit of the law, only to find out that other people, millions of interlopers, if you will, are getting the same benefit much more quickly with no expense to them. While the good guys waited for years, these guys are going to barrel right on through. We have no way of knowing who they are.
That's a class action lawsuit I'd like to file.
I'd like to gather all the
people who are here legally, who learned the Constitution, learned the English language, and learned what it is means to be an American. And I think they have an action, because they are not being protected by the Constitution, which that's what it's there
nor
for.
Nor are our citizens, by the way. Nor are our – you understand the problem, folks. You know, if a government – we could all argue about the Department of Education. There's all kinds of contentious issues as the government overreaching. There's one area that all Americans, I think, should be in agreement, and that area is to protect the well-being and security of our nation and our citizens, to keep out the criminals, to keep out the terrorists. You know, one of the things I'm very proud of is the fact that I belong to a speakers bureau, Alan L. Freed Associates. They're based out of Washington. And very often I'm called upon to deliver seminars on the nexus between immigration, borders, and national security. And usually the audience consists of people within the military or the intelligence services. And I was in front of a room filled with Air Force brass, generals, colonels, so forth. Mm-hmm. And it certainly was an attention getter, because I challenged them and asked them why in the world we still had a military. Now, imagine telling that to a bunch of high-ranking officials of the U.S. Air Force or any other branch of the military. I said, why do we still have a military? And, boy, these guys were glaring daggers at me. I thought I was going to have to run for my life. And I said, look, ladies and gentlemen, please understand something. I'm a huge fan of the military in general, the Air Force in particular. My dad's brother was in the Army Air Corps in the Second World War in the Pacific Theater, and during the Korean War, he was back with the Air Force as a captain. So I'm a big fan of the Air Force. But is it not mm-hmm. true that all of our military men and women have one primary mission, and that mission is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible? How in the world can you accomplish that primary objective when our borders only exist on maps, and we already have, I would argue, tens of millions of illegal aliens in our country from every other country in the world? We have no way of knowing who is here, what their true identities, backgrounds, affiliations, or their intentions are. And yet we spend how much money and cost the lives and well-being of how many young men and women in the military for what purpose? You see, when President Bush sent troops to Iraq, there was a big controversy. Should we or shouldn't we? And I've been on a lot of radio and television programs. They tried to draw me into that debate. Should we be in Iraq? And, you know, you tend to try to stay within your area of expertise. It's kind of silly for me to start offering opinions about an area that I don't have the knowledge to have an opinion worth listening to. You know, opinions are like backsides. Everybody's got one. But what disturbed me, whether we went to Iraq properly or improperly, I still don't know. I have certain feelings, but...
Well, we all know prolonged war is never smart. I mean, that's just basically the art of war.
Absolutely.
You
correct.
Go in, you do what you need to do, and you get out.
Take care of business and go home. But here's the deal. Mm-hmm. We sent Border Patrol agents, including the elite BORTAC team, into Iraq to secure the Iraqi border. And we never did enough to try to find any additional terror cells that might be here inside the United States in the wake of 9/11. And, in fact, one of the points that I had raised when I was testifying before a congressional hearing, I actually still have a video of that hearing along with the transcripts. And, you know, again, if you want to read more about the mischief I've been up to, go to michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, or talkborder.com. But one of the things I talked about was how just a couple of months after 9/11, there was intelligence that a team of Iraqi terrorists, or Pakistani terrorists rather, may have jumped ship seeking to launch an attack on the United States. And at around that time, a falling apart van, gets stopped by Triborough Bridge and Tunnel Authority police officers. The wheels were kind of wobbly and smoke is pouring out of the engine. And they pulled them over, and you had eight men claiming to be from Pakistan in the van. And they checked ID, and the ID turned out to be fake ID. They called the Bureau. The Bureau said, what names are they giving you? They ran the names and said, well, those names don't match. we have no interest in them. They're not on our list. What list are they looking at when someone's giving you false names? You know, I mean,
right.
That's the craziest thing. And then when they called immigration said, did the FBI have an interest? They said no. Then why should we be interested? Click.
Wow.
See, what amazes me, Lauren Martell, and all of you ladies and gentlemen out there, is simply this. We keep seeing and hearing these horror stories. A four-year-old girl gets patted down by the TSA, right? And look, I do a lot of flying. I'm going to be hopping on an airplane so that I can join you and those wonderful folks in South Carolina next weekend. I don't want to get a window seat on a cruise missile, okay? I want the airplanes to be secure. I want our transportation system to be secure. But a four-year-old girl gets patted down because she panicked just before she was going to go through security and ran back to her grandmother and hugged her. Oh, that's suspicious. Yeah, I'm sure that little girl was all set to take over that airplane. They took an 85-year-old woman confined to a wheelchair, drooling on herself, patted her down, realized that she was wearing an adult diaper, and felt something lumpy in the diaper, so they pulled her aside. For the sake of justice, I hope what they found was brown and smelly. I mean, this doesn't seem to end, Lauren.
Well, and I'll tell you, this is what, you know, it's almost like the guy in the boxing ring, you know, who has the one hand up, and it's like everybody's looking at that one hand just as they're about to use, you know, the right hook that comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of our military, God bless our military. I am so honored in this country to have, you know, the military men and women that sacrifice and, you know, do everything to try to keep us safe. But insidiously, even from within, this is the danger.
They're being undermined by the policies of this administration.
They're not even allowed to define the enemy anymore. I mean, they when you talk about things that are being completely changed, the policies and the you know, so when you ask that question to the military brass, it actually was not only just a thought-provoking question, but actually a very real one, Michael, because, you know, they are being divided up among themselves there, and then they are being reprocessed to not use language that literally defines the actual war that we're in. When, you know, you can't call what happened at Fort Hood a terrorist act, you have to call it a workplace violence act. Now, you know, you see what I'm saying? People are trying to change, shifting words to mean different things to make them become socially acceptable and to actually change the majority of people's behaviors just incrementally over time. And so now, even within the military, they think, okay, well, we can't say, you know, jihad, or we can't say, you know, Sharia-compliant constitutions, which Iraq is. All of this time and the money and the effort that we spent over in Iraq, we helped them draft a constitution that allows those people to have to be Sharia-compliant, which, you know, the same in Afghanistan. So
speaking about this nonsense, what do you make of there's 2 points I have to make. Number one, you must be reading my mind. I wrote a commentary that CAPS hopefully will be posting on their website soon. I won't discuss it till they post it, but I just got to read the title because it goes just with what you were saying about that mythical boxer. I called it Misdirection, the strategy that confounds honest discussions about immigration. How's that for a title?
It's right on.
So, you know, when you said that, I immediately thought about that piece that I just sent them, and hopefully it will be posted soon. What do you think about Al Gore buying or selling his cable network to Al Jazeera and staying on as an advisor?
Yeah, I think that this is something that will have a severe ripple effect to our homeland security as well. I mean, when you talk about our borders are not only just the physical borders now, but I mean, we do through television programming and different things, you know, allow things to enter into our spheres, into our, you know, penetrate. That's a word that I've heard a lot lately on some of the conference calls that I've been on. And the word penetrate is that, you know, our enemies have penetrated us on a variety of different levels. And to own the message of media.
I've used the term infiltration, same deal.
And so this is something that's, you know, fairly serious. It's going to come across, if anybody, you know, wonders about it, as, oh, you're being an Islamophobe or whatever. But the you know, the Al-Azhar is basically run by, you know, a dictator out of Qatar. And that's just, that's where it's interesting how they're leveraging, though. And it'll be interesting to see who, you know, will continue to advertise on there and what kind of programming will be on there. But they are now, they've usually only been in Arabic, and then they came on in English. So now they're going to be English speaking and very prominent with, you know, DirecTV and Comcast and everything like that, and try to completely infiltrate with the ideas that it's really called propaganda. I mean, that's another word
it
that
is,
has been.
And, you know, look, let's. I want to be very clear about how I believe. Look, First Amendment, you're entitled to freedom of speech and so forth. But I just find it remarkable that a former vice president and one who has been successful at marketing this idea of global warming, now it's global change or climate change. And look, I am sure that the pollution that we're dumping into the environment is not good. Cancer rates are up. Autism is becoming an ever-increasing problem. I have my youngest son has a form of autism, in fact. And I think we've got to clean up our nest. And I think we should be cutting off the need or ending the need for foreign petroleum and so forth. And I have no problem with using geothermal or tidal or wind power or any power that's clean and renewable. I think those are worthwhile goals. But I think a lot of people are making an awful lot of money off of this business about global warming. So I have a hunch as to what's really the biggest contributor to global warming. I think it's Al Gore's hot air. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you right there. I mean, I was taking a look at the rainforest, you know, an aerial view of the rainforest from 1998 till today, you know, let's just call it 2012. I know we're in 2013. But
yep.
The difference is unbelievable because, you know, in 1998, there were actually trees in the rainforest. If you look at the Brazil rainforest now, it looks like they're set up for, you know, either an English countryside manor or maybe some golf courses, you know.
Well, and, you know, here's the point, folks. The trees have always been referred to as the lungs of planet Earth. And,
yeah.
And, you know, normally when it would get warmer, if in fact it's getting warmer, and you don't look at climate by one forecast to the next. It's trends over lengthy periods of time. But even, and there's so many factors, in fact, some astronomers, and I've always been into astronomy going back to second grade, believe that the star, our sun is actually a variable star, which means that its output does not remain constant. And we know that it goes in 11-year cycles. In fact, going back to 1958, the first time they had what they called an international geophysical year, and it coincided with the launching of our first artificial satellites and Van Allen discovering the radiation belts. And it was all linked to sunspot activity and energy output of the sun. So if the sun cranks out more energy, I assure you that the Earth will get a bit warmer. But nevertheless, if the Earth does get warmer, and if it is in part because of greenhouse gases, and we could have that conversation, then normally vegetation that normally starts shedding leaves, let's say in September, might not shed leaves until October or November. What does that mean? It will process more of the carbon dioxide and get it out of the atmosphere. But if you're leveling forests, then you're taking the vegetation, the lungs of the planet out. Now we've got a problem. I would argue that the decimation of rainforests is far more harmful to the well-being of the Earth and its climate and its inhabitants, and not just human inhabitants, but all creatures, than burning fossil fuels. Now, I'm not a scientist. This isn't my area of expertise. This is just an opinion. But it certainly seems to me that with all the jumping up and down and breast beating about what we need to do, why in the world isn't the UN, this wonderful organization that the president seems to adore, why aren't they going to Brazil and saying, listen, you can't take that rainforest down. You're going to have an impact on the entire world. Don't you think that that's reasonable, what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And what they're doing is the most extreme examples of hypocrisy that, you know, that I've ever seen. And I know that part of this show is kind of going back to the theme of the law. But, you know, this is what's crazy about this. And it's not supposed to be like this in a prosperous society. But, for example, Obama exempts himself, very similar to Al Gore, you know, with his you know, large houses and large lighting bills. And you know,
Gore made sure that he divested himself of that broadcast company before the year ended, right? Because the tax.
Oh yeah, he took great advantage of the tax. Yes, yes, he did. And here's an example, though. This is unique too. President Obama pushing Obamacare through. Nobody really reads it. You know, we all find out what's in it later. 2,500 pages.
Well, that's what Nancy Pelosi said. You won't be able to know what's in it until after it's voted on.
Yes. Little things like when you sell your house, everybody's going to have a $500 extra tax. You know, my friends who are tax preparers are going through trainings now where they are being trained so that they can make the average American public taxpayer compliant. They become almost enforcers in a way. So life is changing, but let's just say Obama then goes to page, apparently it's on page 114, line number 22 of this Obamacare Affordable Health Care law, and it exempts the president. It exempts him. So we are now dealing in a chaotic, hypocritical, arbitrary, ambiguous.
But let me tell you how this all starts, and I don't know how you felt about Ronald Reagan, but I was watching a report today. President Obama is now refusing to abide by certain provisions of the law that deal with the way that we are maintaining prisoners at Guantanamo, terrorists. And
right.
They said, well, he did a signing declaration. Well, I did a little bit of research, and guess who did the very first signing declaration? Who signed the law? Signed the bill into law because Congress had passed it, and he said, okay, I'll sign it. But then he issued a signing declaration where he said, however, we will not enforce this, 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 and this. It became like a Chinese menu. And that president was Ronald Reagan. My point goes back to what I said.
I don't agree with that either. It's the act. I don't personalize the person. Like, I don't have it, you know, Obama, I don't have a.
No,
a personal
I agree
opinion
with you.
Against him. It's the actions of the person.
Yes, and that's
that
the point. That's the point. But mm-hmm. My problem with all of this is that increasingly we have had imperial presidents who say, well, the law does not apply to me. Everybody but me. And, you know, this is kind of like all this investment of ego in politics. I'm going to ask you a riddle. Maybe you know the answer, but I have this idea. Do you know the one reason why most roads and sewer systems and water mains and all the infrastructure tends to be in the state of disrepair in this country?
Well, I have an opinion, but why don't you tell me what your thought process is?
It's a two-word deal, brass plaques. And I'll tell you what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a mayor, a governor, the president, whatever, you have a limited budget. You can't have everything. You can't have, you know, soup and salad. You get one or the other. Well, where would they rather spend money? On repairing and maintaining a roadway or building a beautiful, shiny building that has a big brass plaque with their name emblazoned prominently on it?
Right.
So rather than say, well, we have $1 billion for maintenance, should we maintain the highways and the sewer systems? Or we can take the money and build this huge, you know, 43-story tall building in a prominent location and have this big brass plaque with my name on it. Yep, let's go for the building, like the Rockefeller Center, right? We're going to build this big monstrosity so my name will be up there. This is like the Taj Mahal and the pyramids all rolled into one, and it's all done because of the egos of some characters who, if they couldn't win elected office, probably couldn't get a job. Many of them. Not all of them. There are exceptions. I know there are some people will be upset with me. I do know some good people in government. Unfortunately, not enough of them.
Yeah, but there's a difference between a statesperson and a politician. And, you know, everybody can be corrupted. I mean, everybody falls short and, you know, has to,
in every
you know,
profession,
watch
by the way,
it.
Not just politics.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, every day you kind of have to wake up and set the compass to, you know, the moral code or whatever. But we've really gone so far away from that. So once you become such a humanistic or secular, you know, morphous society where it's whatever feels good in the moment, you know, that or whatever is good and going to benefit. It's so short-sighted, you know, where if somebody just says, I'm going to do this because this is going to get my family $11 million in a house, you know, in the Midwest on 100 acres. You know, if I vote for this, the lobbying people have promised X, Y, and Z. You know, it's very easy to do that. And I'm not throwing stones on that right now. All I'm saying is simply it's unsustainable to continue to have a sovereign, prosperous nation when you you just are arbitrarily and capriciously enforcing things, you know, based on whoever wants to do whatever at the time. You know, like Mayor Bloomberg making your city, your beautiful city, a sanctuary city. That's just wrong.
But you know what? It started with Dinkins. It was continued to an extent, not quite the same extent, by Mayor Koch, who I thought was the best mayor we ever had. Giuliani maintained that program, and it was under Giuliani's administration that a 24-year-old police officer by the name of Robert Machete was killed by an illegal alien who I had deported. I physically put this piece of garbage on an airplane. This guy had a green card, and he lost it because of convictions for narcotics-related crimes. Guy by the name of Ronaldo Rayside.
But
here's my point. Twice the NYPD had this piece of work in custody. They did not notify immigration. If they had back then, I assure you immigration would have picked him up. So he was at large. He was out there on the street, free as a bird. And on the third occasion that he's encountered by a cop, that cop is 24-year-old Robert Machete. He goes for Officer Machete's firearm. Bullets fly. Machete is cut down in Brooklyn. He was part of the Brooklyn South Task Force of the NYPD. I spent years working with Brooklyn South Task Force. They were a great bunch of cops, very conscientious, gutsy guys, I got to tell you. And this cop died on that street corner. His wife was pregnant at the time with a daughter he would never meet. I met her. In fact, I wound up testifying at that murder trial. I was on the witness stand for the better part of a day. This was a horrible crime, and it was preventable. It was preventable if NYPD had not been restricted from working cooperatively with immigration. Folks, what we really need to come back to is the fundamental reason we have immigration laws. You would never know it listening to the assertions of the open borders immigration anarchists. Those laws exist for simply two purposes: to protect innocent lives and protect the jobs of American workers. We are allowing tens of billions of dollars in remittances and other sources of funding to be drained from the American economy to be sent to other countries. Mexico's largesse amounts to well over $20 billion, with a B, every year. And that's not the only way. Some of the folks who work illegally get the bank accounts. They get cash cards, you know, ATM cards, so the money can easily be withdrawn in other countries. I took some filmmakers from North Carolina, Mark Hager and his bunch. I'm going to be meeting with Mark. In fact, he's coming in to South Carolina. He's in North Carolina. He's a history professor. We videotaped Roosevelt Avenue in Jackson Heights, Queens, Drug Central here in New York City. The places that now wire money are working 24/7. We drove by these locations at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. There were a line of people waiting to conduct business transactions. At 1 o'clock in the morning? Are these people who just woke up and said, oh my gosh, I just remembered I have a check to cash? I don't think so. So you're looking at the money being drained from the American economy. The World Bank says that roughly half of all of the remittances that flow from the first world, the United States and Europe, into the third world are actually the funds drained out of the economy of the United States. This at a time when the deficit is front page news. And you know what's amazing, Lauren? When I call up my friends, the producers of various programs on various television networks, not one network, all networks, and I'll say to them, you know, you want to talk about unemployment? Why don't we talk about the fact that every year, every month, we allow in about 100,000 lawful immigrants, including their families. Now, the kids that are coming in are among the numbers. They're not working immediately, but ultimately they get old enough to work. So we're talking about 100,000 potential workers and potential workers every month, green cards. We're talking about the J-1 exchange visitor program, thousands more every month. We're talking about students. Last year, in 2011, that's the last year we have the stats for, 447,000 foreign students admitted to the United States. Most of them will ultimately get practical training authorization, meaning they will have the authority to work. We are admitting H-1B and H-2A and all these other categories of so-called temporary work visas. Bottom line, legally, we are bringing in between 100 to 200,000 authorized foreign workers every single month. So when you hear that we created 150 or 180 or 170,000 jobs, guess what, folks? We probably allowed in more legal workers than the number of new jobs created, and we're still not talking about the illegal aliens who ran the borders or who came here either with tourist visas or under the visa waiver program, that other insanity where aliens from 37 countries can enter the United States without even getting a visa. So how in the world is this not an immigration story? If you're talking about the economy, if you're talking about unemployment, if you're talking about criminal justice, the fact that hundreds of American cities are infested by MS-13 and the Mexican cartels, if you want to talk about national security, look at that report, A Line in the Sand, commissioned by Congressman Mike McCaul, who will be heading up a Homeland Security Committee in Congress, actually does head it up now as of the swearing-in yesterday.
I think he might actually be reviewing this deal that Al Gore shook out right now, because I don't think that deal is over yet. You know, those kind of things are, you know, have to be looked at and scrutinized about following the money of the – it was $100 million he sold it for, and
well, –
kind of kept a sweetheart deal in it, but you know, what is that money tied to any, you know, terrorist groups or any unindicted
terrorists? No, I fully agree with you, but here's my point, though. The point I'm making, Lauren, is if you look at just the immigration issue, look at how it impacts every single... By the way, have you been following the news lately? A bigger problem now with whooping cough, with diphtheria, with resistant tuberculosis. One of the things that immigration is supposed to do is make certain that aliens who come to the United States are in good health, that they have a certificate from doctors and so forth showing that their inoculations are up to snuff. Understand, Ellis Island, that we hear so much about from the open borders crowd, if we tried to reopen it, they'd be the first ones screaming bloody murder. It was a quarantine station run cooperatively by public health and immigration.
Sure, you didn't want to bring in smallpox or typhoid or all sorts of all the bad things that
leprosy
are communicable.
Or name the disease, right. So look at how all of this and the cost of health care, all these issues, okay? How in the world can a producer at a news program say to anybody and be reasonable about it, well, we're going to talk about unemployment, but this isn't an immigration story. We're going to talk about the emergence of all these diseases that we thought were done, whooping cough and tuberculosis and mumps and measles and polio, but we're not going to talk about immigration. How in the world is immigration not a component of those stories, Lauren Martell?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is. It's the top issue. It is in America. And just when you said that about all the jobs that are created, they're not even American jobs, what you're telling us. So even when, you know, Obama says he's done this for America, he's created, you know, jobs, but it doesn't help the American citizenry.
No,
so,
we used to raid the sweatshops, which now, of course, are in Malaysia and China and elsewhere. And in fact, China's losing sweatshops to Malaysia because Malaysia will undercut China. I mean, this is a race to the bottom, folks. If liberals are concerned about human rights and working conditions, they should be screaming at the top of their lungs. But, you know, we used to raid the sweatshops. And, you know, we used to hear the radio commercials, look for the union label. You know that deal. I'm not going to sing.
Right.
I used to make money with my singing. People paid me not to. But you got to know your limitations, you know. Clint Eastwood said so. Man's got to know his limitations. But the point is, before we got to the office, we had bail bondsmen waiting for us, and they were sent there by the same union. So everyone thinks, well, if we're buying American, are you really buying American if it's illegal aliens or workers who committed fraud to get visas in order to work in the United States? Is that really the American dream? How is it that the American dream does not any longer seem to apply to Americans?
Oh, well, I know. It doesn't. It really, really doesn't. And, I mean, the American dream is shifted. And that really, the American dream, unfortunately, kind of came out of 1913, right around the time of the Federal Reserve and the you know, IRS coming out in the 30s. But, you know, I think the American dream used to be liberty and and freedom and sovereignty.
Work
and,
hard and you can achieve success.
Work
That's
hard,
what was
yeah.
explained to me by my mother,
and
who herself was
shifted.
A legal immigrant.
Yeah, it shifted through a psychological, you know, Bernier kind of social experiment to, it means that, you know, you have a house and a picket fence and two cars and 2.1 children, you know, and it got redefined in a lot of ways through marketing and things like that. And to a certain extent, that's no harm, no foul, but in such a way that it has dramatically shifted the way people really think or even don't think anymore.
they really don't think. You know, we're almost at the end, but there is someone calling, and let me just make sure that we didn't
and you know what,
somebody.
I might have to run. Remember, I told you I only had about an hour for the show
okay,
tonight.
Okay, well, listen, Lauren Martell, I want to thank you so much for all the work you're doing
South
Carolina with the Tea Party. I'm looking forward to joining you for dinner Friday night.
Absolutely. And safe travels, and I will see you next week.
Sounds like a plan, kiddo. I'm going to stay on just for a couple of minutes, folks. Sure. Lauren, I'm going to wish you a great weekend. Tell the gang and Joe Dugan and everyone. You want to give out his phone number one more time? Way to reach Joe?
Absolutely will do. Joe Dugan is the head of the Myrtle Beach Tea Party. He can be reached at 843-234-0118. And thanks for all you do as well. God bless America. God bless you. I'll see you next week.
Thanks so much, Lauren. So long. Let me see who we have here. Caller, this is Mike Cutler. Who's on the line?
Hi, Mike. This is Carl.
Hi, Carl. How are you? Sorry to keep you waiting so long.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I just wanted to call in. I had an idea for maybe a future show. You
sure.
always have this talking point that if you want to know how bad illegal immigration is, look at the price of narcotics, hard drugs in the United States.
I've always made that point, that the price has stayed constant, which is the real barometer, the real metric as to whether or not the borders are secure. That's right.
And, you know, the fact is the very same people who are the most fervently pro-open borders, like George Soros, he's also the guy funding, you know, the legalization of hard drugs. I mean, not just marijuana. He wants, you know, just as there's no person that's illegal, there's no drug that should be illegal. And I think the you know, their thinking is that, you know, well, of course.
Well, I don't know that Soros isn't supportive of legalizing the drugs. Where are you getting that from?
He's a major supporter of drug legalization.
Okay.
I mean, he's put a lot of money into that.
You're calling from Indiana, by the way. You can let everybody know what you're working with IFI, right?
You know, I've done, you know, a little bit. I mean, you know, we got another big, you know, we have a crisis here in Indiana because of what's going to happen in Illinois when they give driver's licenses.
Yep.
You know, in Illinois, it's going to flood the state of Indiana as well, and the whole Midwest is going to be a disaster. But I guess my point is that the ultra, you know, open borders and the people who are for drug legalization, their argument is that, well, we can never control our borders, and we could never get the price of drugs back down. And the point that there have been successes in the drug war when we have tightened up the border in particular areas. When Reagan first came in, they had the South Florida Task Force. They shut down the flow of drugs.
I'll tell you, Carl, we could visit this. We're towards the end of the show. I could tell you I was up at DEA Intelligence, and we could talk about how ineffective the South Florida Task Force was. And, in fact, what they found was it pushed a lot of the drug trafficking activities towards the Mexican border. You know,
exactly.
Understand this point about our borders. It's like a balloon. If you squeeze one, then it's going to bulge somewhere else. You need to be prepared to react to where you're pushing the traffic. If you don't, all that you do is divert it. And that
Absolutely.
Pretty much is what was happening. And it was so funny because I saw a congressional report about the South Florida Task Force. It was called the Vice President's Task Force on Drugs, by the way, is the other name for it. And they said that because the smugglers had to take a more circuitous route, they declared it to be a success. And I thought that the idea to success was to curtail the supply, not divert it through a more circuitous route. So we could talk about that. But I think that one of the big problems that we have is that we're not doing anything to discourage anyone from using it. There are so many commercials about cigarette smoking. They've been very effective. Buy a new car. It will be very unusual to find a cigarette lighter or an ashtray in your new car. So, you know, education programs work. When was the last time you saw a commercial warning about heroin, cocaine, crack, or any of those other poisons?
Well, but isn't one of the facts that as soon as the South Florida Task Force had a brief period of success, but the big power brokers in Mexico, Carlos Slim was a financier. He had the Colombians
Hang on one sec. I don't know where I'm not going to start making allegations about people, though, unless we can substantiate it. And fairness to them.
This has been reported. PBS Frontline did a whole four hours worth of this. The fact that they brought the Colombians into Mexico to get the route through Mexico and to use the open borders movement that was being set up in cities across America.
Well, the other part, the Colombians.
Pipeline.
I'll tell you what also happened, and then I'm gonna say goodnight to you. I've got another call. I'm just gonna give him a second. One of the things that also happened when we started going after the drug cartel members in Medellin and Cali, but especially Medellin, they wanted to insulate themselves from American law enforcement, so they would rather deal with the Mexicans who got part of the drug trade, but in exchange they were insulated from American law enforcement. And in fact, if you went to Jackson Heights, 15 years ago the Colombians were running Jackson Heights. Today it's the Mexicans. So there's a lot of factors that play into that.
Well, I think it's worth having, you know, going into this more detail in the history of it, because I think you make a really good point. And the Colombians first didn't want to do the Mexicans because they knew the Mexicans would call the shots. But now the Mexicans control the drug trade.
But what's also happened is, if you'll notice, it's very rare that we start to go after the Colombians. Now the pressure is on Mexico because they're the ones who are physically bringing the poisons into the United States now.
Well, it's an interesting history, but we've had temporary successes, and the idea that we should legalize drugs because we can't control our borders.
No, I'm opposed to legal. Let's be very clear about it. I'm against legalizing drugs. Carl, I'm going to thank you so much for the call. I'm going to wish you a great weekend and a happy New Year. Call back, and we'll talk again next week. Well, actually, next week I'm not going to be on. I hope to have someone filling in for me. I'm going to be in South Carolina with the South Carolina Tea Party Coalition. But I'll be back the week after.
Okay, good luck. Bye.
Thank you so much. So long. You're on with Mike Cutler. Who's calling?
Hi, Michael. This is Steve Salvi, founder of Ohio Jobs and Justice.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Great.
Thank you for your call, by the way.
Pardon?
Thank you for your call.
Oh, certainly. I enjoy your show. It's an excellent show. Sorry I missed Lauren. Anyway, I know you're wrapping up the show today, but I just want to support some of your comments that I'm from Ohio.
Okay.
You're absolutely right. All 50 states are border states. In Ohio, we're dealing with human smuggling, the sex slave trade, drug smuggling, identity theft, a number of different types of fraud, including visa, tax fraud, gang violence, drunk driving, black market weapons sales, et cetera. And so this is a very serious issue. We've had multiple terrorism cases in Ohio already. And our sovereignty really is being eroded every day that our immigration laws are not enforced. And obviously, as one gentleman just talked about, you know, the task force in Florida. But in addition to, you know, the outward protection of the border, on the border, you know, you obviously understand the importance of interior enforcement.
Well, but, you know, I did that job for 26 years. Before that, I was an inspector with the INS. So this is more than just passing interest. It was my life's work, in a manner of speaking.
Exactly. And regarding your earlier comment regarding, you know, the number of legal aliens in the United States, and I agree it's probably in excess of 20 million.
Yep.
We really have, and people need to understand, we basically have a nation of illegal aliens within the United States. And if people consider, look at the population of some other countries, such as Sweden, which I think has a population of around 6 million. There are more illegal aliens in the United States than the population of dozens of countries. And I think that's a point that needs to be made. And I appreciate you taking my call, and have a good evening.
Well, I thank you, Steve, and I thank you for the call. I'm glad you listened. And please pass the word along to all your friends. Let them know that we're here, and next Friday. I will be down in the South Carolina, Myrtle Beach. I'm very much looking forward to that, but I will be back on this program the following Friday. Hopefully we'll have someone filling in for me next Friday. We'll see how that works out. But I'm here just about every Friday at 7 o'clock Eastern Time because, to me, this is the way of dealing with the virtual news blackout, if you will, that we're finding in the media today. It's remarkable. This isn't censorship by government. It's censorship by corporation these days.
I agree.
So have a happy New Year, Steve. Again, I thank you so much for the call. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Yep, bye-bye. Well, we're at the end of the show. We ran a little bit long, which sometimes happens, folks. It's great to spend Friday evenings with you. I have to tell you, I look forward to joining all of you at 7 o'clock East Coast time on Friday nights. Opportunity to fill you in on the information that I can assure you, you will not hear anywhere else. It's absolutely astonishing to me that journalists, so-called fact finders, as they're supposed to be, chroniclers of the truth, turn a blind eye to what I believe is one of the most serious threats, challenges that America and Americans face. I want you all, for the moment, just think back to the days and weeks after 9/11, when you saw a parade of politicians with self-righteous indignation march up to those forests of microphones in front of the network television cameras and thump the podium and demanded to know why in the world nobody connected the dots. How could this happen to us? Why didn't they connect the dots? I was tempted to send boxes of crayons to Capitol Hill and state capitals across the country to help them connect the dots. And you know what, folks? When you try to connect the dots, they don't want to hear about it. Al Gore, and I know I'm ragging on Al Gore, and boy, he gives you so many opportunities to rag on him. And I will tell you again, I'm a registered Democrat. But the insanity of an inconvenient truth, folks, if there is an inconvenient truth, it's that a country without secure borders can no more stand than can a house without walls. That, folks, is the real inconvenient truth. The globalists are literally and figuratively making out like bandits, whether it's the banks who become the silent partners of every illegal alien who is exploited and works his tail off to be able to send pennies back to his home country, or the drug cartels that move megabucks that rival the national economies of some major countries, to everybody in between. They are the silent partners. It's the immigration lawyers who see in the immigration laws and open borders limitless clientele. It's the employers who, rather than pay Americans living wages and abide by the laws that concern working conditions and environmental issues, would rather outsource their companies altogether, or where they can't do that, bring in foreign workers who will tolerate the intolerable. You know, I've often said that there's always room for another oarsman on the slave ship. So this is really what we're confronting. And the biggest thing that we confront, folks, is the apathy of our fellow Americans. Too many Americans are more concerned with who's winning Dancing with the Stars, who's going to win the Super Bowl, or which young lady is going to appear in what movie, or who's in rehab this week, than they are with what is going on at City Hall, their state capital, or Washington. If this is, in fact, a government by the people, for the people, of the people, and I'm sure I'm getting it that order mixed up, and I hope that the late President Lincoln doesn't mind that I screwed up his wonderful quote. Well, it can't be a government of the people if the American people are disengaged, uninvolved, and uninformed. And that's why I do this program every weekend, every Friday, rather, at the beginning of the weekend, why I'm doing Talk Border, why I write for CAPS, why I do all the things I do to try to provide the insight that, unfortunately, is virtually impossible to come by anywhere else these days. Once again, three websites for you to go to. Please go to michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, or check out capsweb.org, and that's about it for tonight. I just want to remind you once again Democracy is not a spectator sport. We need to be as demanding with our elected representatives and letting them know what we expect from them as we would a waiter or waitress in a restaurant where we sit down to eat. We need to make our demands known. Please place your orders. Educate yourselves. If you like the program, tell your friends and neighbors about it. And I will look forward to being with you in a couple of weeks right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. So long, everybody. Have a happy new year and a great weekend coming up. Good night.